Talking Comics with My Dad. More comics on this podcast than any other podcast. I'm Rachel.
I'm Jim.
And we got some news this week. We got some things to talk about.
Absolutely we do.
Yeah.
Now, last week we talked about Evil Superman.
Which is interesting.
And because I've got Injustice 2 on my PS4.
Yeah.
And so I read the second volume, we both did, of Injustice 2, which is based on the video game. And we'll get to that coming up a little bit. We got some other Superman news as well on the podcast today, since we talked about Evil Superman, Superman 3, the Christopher Reeve film, where it becomes Evil Superman, and he's a misogynist, and he's a drunk, and his suit's all dirty. Well, I think this is really cool. They're going back, DC is, for a miniseries, and they're calling it Superman 78. And the Superman is drawn like Christopher Reeve.
Yeah.
And it's in the same style as the Richard Donner film. It's really a homage to Richard Donner, who we lost here recently, the director of the Superman films. And so what they do is they take like Brainiac and some of the really cool villains that back then the technology just was not there to put on the big screen. And so they're making basically they're calling it a Donnerized take on Superman from that era with Superman drawn as Christopher Reeve. I think it's going to be a really cool series for them to do that.
No Nuclear Man, though, from what I've heard, which is very disappointing.
I know. But Brainiac instead, which I think is far cooler.
And so apparently Superman's going to come aboard Brainiac's spaceship and discover, and I quote, a shocking piece of his past that changes his entire future.
Okay, well, stay tuned for that, folks.
I'm excited for it. You know, I think the old Richard Donner Superman movies, you know, say what you will about them, I thought they were very charming. And of course, it's Christopher Reeve as Superman, you know, who did a great job.
Who really, yeah, was a great, unknown guy at that time to cast him as Superman, and he was the perfect Superman of that era.
He embodied the character so well. And
absolutely.
The movies were cheesy at times, but I thought that they were thoroughly charming, and I'm very excited to see them explored in comic format.
Absolutely. I think it's a great, great thing that they're doing. So we'll get to Injustice coming up in a little bit. We got some other things we want to talk about, keeping it on the DC side of things. And Batgirl. Batgirl is going to get her own chance to, you know, to be out there in the DC cinematic universe. They cast Leslie Grace, who is in the musical The Heights that came out recently. She's going to play, of course, Barbara Gordon. And it looks like J.K. Simmons,
yes,
who played Jim Gordon in Justice League.
And J. Jonah Jameson.
Exactly.
Well, lots of J names. It's
for J.K. Simmons. And so he's going to, apparently he's in negotiations to play Jim Gordon, father of Batgirl Barbara Gordon, in this upcoming Batgirl project.
And really, J.K. Simmons is one of those actors I feel like can do no wrong when you put him in stuff, because he's great.
Right, and he has a 3-movie deal, by the way, and so this would kind of fit into the current contract that he has to reprise Jim Gordon, of course, for Matt Reeves with the Batman film with Robert Pattinson, that you had a Jeffrey Wright. They wanted to go a complete reboot, and so Jeffrey Wright is playing Jim Gordon in that version of Batman that'll be out next year.
Yeah.
But I think it'd be cool. J.K. Simmons coming back to play, hopefully coming back to play Commissioner Gordon in the Batgirl film.
Yeah, looking forward to it if it happens.
Are you excited about a Batgirl film? You think it's,
it really just depends on, I guess I'll decide when I see it. Because, I like Batgirl. I've never been, super involved with her story, but I think she's interesting. I thought she was very interesting when she took her turn as Oracle.
Did you like Batwoman on the CW?
I didn't get to watch a whole lot of it, I'll be honest. I saw it occasionally. It was one of those things that, this is kind of interesting, but it never really, held me.
Right. Gotcha on that. So we'll see. We'll see if Batgirl ends up being this, next part of the bigger part of the DC universe going forward. Also, you have some other things we want to get to with Marvel films and with what's going on with Scarlett Johansson suing Disney over the release of Black Widow on Disney Plus.
Yeah.
Because what happened there was, she, in her contract, she was supposed to get I think it was like 10%, a certain percentage of the box office, which it did come out in theaters, but because of COVID and everything, obviously people, with the option of staying at home, a lot of people are staying at home and watching on Disney Plus, which, let's just be blunt about this, cheats her out of part of her contract. And so she's suing Disney. They're saying, well, she doesn't have a leg to stand on this. If it's in her contract,
yeah,
to get 10% of the box office and you went and released this, you know, via streaming, then yeah, you're kind of screwing her out of part of her contract,
it's
which she
there
deserves.
On paper, and Disney should have considered that with COVID still going on, because we are still very much in the middle of a pandemic.
Sure.
It's like they should have taken the steps to alter her contract so she was fairly compensated.
Make it fair. I mean, she's played the character for a long time.
Yeah.
And be fair about it. And so now she's taking them to court,
and
we'll see where this goes.
From the incredibly reliable news source of Twitter, I actually read as recently as today that Emma Stone might be joining her in her suit because of the recent release of the movie Cruella, and that she dealt with some similar things of it being watched way more on streaming than people went into theaters for it. So I would say that I'm not a lawyer. Pretty sure I'm not. But I think they have a good case for the fact that Disney kind of screwed them over.
You promise them a percentage of box office, and this is where it would have been fair, like you said. Come back and say, look, we know where things are right now. We want to be fair about this. Maybe it's not going to be the full 10% or whatever. It's going to be part of this, but we're going to, you know, we're going to find a way to compensate you to a level that you're both going to be satisfied with this. You're going to feel like that we're out to try to cheat you out of money that you deserve.
Exactly. And I've heard some people argue that it's like, oh, well, they're big Hollywood celebrities. You know, are they really missing out on that much? And it's like, this is their job. This is their job.
They're missing out on a lot of money.
They deserve financial compensation for all the work they put into their job.
If it's in the contract, then they should be paid the money for, and box office is part of that, and Disney, like I said, we understand where things are right now. Disney should have done right by both of those actresses.
Yeah. And
simple
let's be
as
real.
That.
Disney's been shady for a while. This is kind of...
Yes, this is nothing new on their part.
Yeah, so...
And I'll take it over to my other world that I work in, sports,
mm-hmm.
where the recent decision from Texas and Oklahoma, here we go, we're going to talk a little sportball talk for you.
Well, time for me to tune out.
Leaving the Big 12 and the commissioner of that conference accusing ESPN, which is owned by Disney
mm-hmm.
and ABC, of manipulating conferences and trying to leave to get better TV deals and things like that. And the commissioner of the Big 12 conference sent ESPN a cease and desist letter on manipulating some of these conferences. So this is the reason I bring this up, is it's kind of a pattern of what we've known for a long time about Disney, ABC, ESPN, and how they handle some of these
things.
The
mouse is very unscrupulous. Yeah,
the mouse can be a rat sometimes.
The mouse is a rat.
can very well be. The other thing, keeping it on that Disney Plus owned by that rat, by the way, is we're cracking on them one moment, and then we're going, hey.
Check this out.
The What If, I saw the trailer the other night for the What If, these other, you know, great Marvel characters would have been, like Steve Rogers would have been Iron Man and things like that. It looks really, really good.
It does.
It looks like it could be a lot of fun to watch.
Yeah.
And even though I just bagged on them hard, ragged on them, might want to spend some money on Disney Plus to watch this if nothing else.
Or, you know, if you want to pirate it, I know some credible sources, but...
Okay, well, we don't...
I'm kidding. Only joking.
Just write that down later, okay? Okay, so yeah, but it looks really good. I think it's going to be a lot of fun, the What If... I just like these different takes on these, you know, iconic Marvel characters. Should be a lot of fun.
Yeah, and there's some comparisons there to this basically being Marvel's version of the Twilight Zone.
Exactly.
Which is fascinating to me. I love the Twilight Zone, so, you know, you add superheroes to that, and you have my attention.
Absolutely. Also, we have Suicide Squad. Mm-hmm. It's getting lots of good reviews.
I'm excited. I'm really hopeful.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to watching it because it's getting, you know, Idris Elba's getting some really good reviews in it. you know, Margot Robbie always does as Harley Quinn.
Because she's Margot Robbie.
But I can't wait to hear the voice of Sylvester Stallone coming out of a giant shark.
Yes.
I just can't wait for that.
Fun fact, by the way, about a man shark.
Yes.
Canonically, within the Marvel Universe, he and John Constantine dated at some point. The more you know.
Oh.
It's true. It happened.
I'm not going to argue with you on that one. You're pretty solid in your sources, so I'll
go on. I didn't even give any sources.
Well.
But it's in one of the animated.
I'm sure that you have a source that you can at some point bring back and say, this is where I heard this or read this.
Oh, this is great. Now I can just make stuff up, and if I say it's canon.
No, we don't.
No, but it really did happen, but I think that's funny. And I'm really looking forward to seeing Suicide Squad. I think that might be one of the things I have to don my mask and go to the theater to see.
Absolutely.
I really wanted the first one to be good. I really, really wanted
it. And it had things about it that were okay. I thought it was great that they, you know, got Ben Affleck as Batman, and you had some, you know, a little bit of tie-in in the DC universe. But
Margot Robbie trained to be a gymnast for that movie.
Yeah, I mean, she put the time in, and
I'm really hyped for this, and I'm even excited to see John Cena in this new one.
I think I like him.
I really like John Cena. You know, he's an accomplished man. He's an actor, wrestler, children's book author.
Idris Elba. Well, Bloodsport in this one,
yes.
Correct?
Yes. Great name.
Not to be confused with Bloodshot, played by Will Smith.
Bloodshot or Bloodgun or any of those other 90s.
Blood BB Gun or
Blood Wolf or Wolf Blood or Blood.
Something like that. All right, so read Volume 2 of Injustice.
Not Volume 1 because I can't tell numbers.
That's okay. But I have a video game of this, Injustice 2. It's been a lot of fun to play, and it's kind of our tie into what we were doing last week with Evil Superman,
mm-hmm.
because this is what was going to really kind of the foundation for Zack Snyder's films going forward. The inspiration for the next films, which we're never going to see now, was really Injustice, and a Superman that is what the Joker uses a gas on him. He kills Lois Lane. She's pregnant with their child. And then when Superman comes out of this, he rips the Joker's heart out. And so he crosses that line we talked about with the Man of Steel film with General Zod.
Right.
Everybody was freaking out when he killed Michael Shannon as General Zod. Superman can't do that. Well, this is where a world where Superman is tricked into killing the woman that he loves and his unborn child. And he just starts to go into this very much a mental spiral of, I can't protect the people I love unless I kill the people that I perceive are threats.
Yes.
And like, for example, in Injustice Volume 2, Gods Among Us, you know, Ma and Pa Kent, he takes them to the Fortress of Solitude and basically holds them hostage there because he knows that's the only place that they'll be safe.
Yeah.
And they don't want to be there. And so you have which, you know, really is the theme of Injustice, which was kind of the theme of Batman versus Superman of these two, you know, in the past and in the comic book canon are best of friends, colleagues, but obviously with Batman, Superman, they pitted the two against each other. Then they started working together. This pits these two guys who have very, very diametrically opposed views of how to deal with criminals. Batman is still very much, we don't kill criminals. We don't kill anybody. Superman is bullcrap to that.
It's like, sometimes it's good to kill people, actually.
And he encourages the others that are on his side of this. Wonder Woman, Flash. And Flash is like, I'm not going to do this. But, you know, he encourages those around him that are on his side in this particular brewing war. Because Metropolis is totally destroyed, by the way, in this whole process.
Yeah.
And Lex Luthor is on his side. They find out that Lex Luthor had built a bomb shelter and survived.
Really weird thing to see. Not only Superman referring to Lex Luthor as Lex, but
hugging him when they find him when they hear the radio beacon, and they find
hugs him,
and they find him in this you know, basically this fallout shelter, and he hugs him. He's like, "I'm so glad you're still alive." And you're just going,
"What?
What?" And he becomes part of the, essentially...
the Superman squad.
The Justice League, or like at least Superman's version of the Justice League.
Yeah, Superman and pals. And a quick bit of info about this comic. So I like that it mentioned that this story takes place before the start of the game, so it gives you a bit of a timeline. Tom Taylor was the writer for this, and then we have a whole slew of artists here working on this. We have Mike S. Miller, Bruno Redondo, Tom Derenick, Kevin Maguire, Neil Gooch, Jeremy Rapak, Germanico, and Jonas Trindade, which is really an interesting collection of artists. And that's one of the things I will say. The art, you can tell it's different people working on it because the style shifts.
Which is cool. Which I really like, that different chapters by different artists, and you can see the differences and their vision of what the character should look like. And I just think it's a fascinating story where there's a part of me that feels bad for Superman.
Oh yeah.
Because he's always been, the most powerful individual in the DC universe, maybe in the comic book universe. And his physical strength is unquestioned. It's now the mental part where, this is coming more into light with what's happened in the Olympics and Simone Biles and dealing with mental health concerns, that here's somebody as strong as Superman is, mentally breaks down. He was responsible for losing his wife, losing his child, though not by his own decision, but it wasn't his fault.
It was his actions.
But now his thing is, I have to protect everybody. And if I perceive anybody as a threat, there's the great scene in this with where the Flash and him kind of debate. They're playing chess. And Superman's throwing out, well, what if somebody does this? And the Flash is like, well, so if somebody has a barking dog or dog gets loose, that person goes to prison because their dog got loose. It's this very interesting back and forth of how Superman sees things and how the Flash, even though he's on Superman's side to a degree, does not necessarily agree with him. Where Wonder Woman is totally, totally behind what Superman wants to do. I mean, there's a romantic relationship there that they kind of allude to.
Right.
And she's totally behind whatever he does. She thinks killing villains, perfectly fine. And killing anybody that is a threat that they perceive as a threat. Acropolis, they launch an attack. And I forget the character that he ends up killing. It's not Steppenwolf, but...
It's one of the other big scary dudes.
Right, and Superman kills him.
Yeah.
And Superman doesn't think much about it, to be quite honest.
Yeah.
And so that kind of tells Darkseid, okay, maybe we just need to leave this guy alone. And we're going to leave Earth alone. Because there's a sense that because of what's gone on, Earth is vulnerable because they hear that Superman is talking about potential peace. And without getting into too much, Martian Manhunter plays a big role in this as being kind of a facilitator. And at least early on, maybe switching Superman's mind to, okay, maybe I need to calm down.
Yeah,
and
like,
maybe
let's de-escalate here.
Right. And then that's when Acropolis attacks. And that changes everything.
Yeah.
And it's back to, I'm just going to have to kill some people here because they're a threat to us.
And it is interesting to see the way Superman's perspective shifts so quickly to very black and white ways of thinking. And I mean, in a way that makes sense because I think, Superman has always been expected to be kind of the Boy Scout and kind of the good one. And I'd imagine there's a lot of pressure there in knowing you have this much power and knowing that you're mentally fragile and that, maybe your psyche can't keep up with the amount of physical strength that you have. And that's got to be a little scary.
And they make there's the scene with Ma and Pa Kent and Jor-El, the hologram in the Fortress of Solitude,
yes.
Where they're trying to talk some sense into Superman, saying, wait a minute, this is not who you are. And he basically ignores all three of them. And they kind of hug each other, which is like, hey, we've, and they all talk, hey, we've, like Ma and Pa Kent say to to Jor-El, hey, we tried to do the best we could. And he's like, I get it. I shouldn't have unleashed somebody as powerful as him on your world.
He didn't really have a choice though.
Right. And they also make the reference to when the first time Ma and Pa Kent discovered that Superman had powers when he lost his blanket, which they make a reference to Krypto because the dog that takes the blanket is this white dog that looks just like Krypto, the super dog. And he flips over a tractor, and that's when they figure out he's got powers, and they basically compare him to the where he is now as a frightened, angry child.
Yeah.
That's now an adult that has the capacity of killing every possible person in the world.
And we have to ask ourselves, if he goes crazy, will we still call him Superman?
Right. And so there's, you know, and there's a lot of great storylines in this, but
personal favorite non-major story related scene, Harley Quinn punching Lobo out a window and him landing in front of a moving truck.
Right.
That was great. And yeah, Lobo's also in this.
And she gets some powers, and that's part of the back half of the story, a little bit, a plan that Superman has to enhance in his vision the security of the world.
Right.
And so it's I think it's a really good read. And if you played the game, obviously it has even more relevance and a stronger connection to
it's
that.
It's a nice little supplement.
Absolutely. And so, yeah, check it out, Injustice, Gods Among Us, which came out, it's been a while ago since this was released.
It's been, gosh.
Because the game has been out for a while.
Yeah, I'm trying to find the, 2014.
Yeah, so it's been out for a while.
Yeah, so, and there's plenty more issues in this if you want to catch up, so.
If you like your evil Superman, then Injustice is really a good thing to check out.
Yeah, so it's been pretty cool. But I liked reading this. This was a lot of fun, so.
Okay. Well, I guess that's it for this week.
Yeah, I think it is. Well, until next time, I'm Rachel.
I'm Jim.
And we'll see you around.